Олимпийская инспекция на высшем уровне. Владимир Путин.
Вопросы безопасности решаются на мировом уровне. Задействована даже система космического
мониторинга. Олимпийский Сочи готовится к приезду журналистов.
Особые меры безопасности были предприняты на этот раз и на главной.
Со вторника в Сочи начали действовать беспрецедентные меры безопасности.
Путин поручил Минэнерго взять под жесткий контроль работу энергосистемы
Сочи. Скоро весь мир будет жить по сочинскому времени. Наступает Сочи. Тайм.
In less than a month, the most expensive Olympic Games in history will start. But in the run-up to Sochi, there's been little discussion about sports. Instead, the focus has been on politics, human rights, and the ever-present threat of terrorism. What will LGBT activists and athletes do at the Games? How will the Russian authorities respond? Will Chechen militant Doku Umarov pull off a terrorist attack as he's pledged to do? And how will the Sochi Olympics, which have been shrouded in controversy almost from the outset, make Russia look to the world? Such questions are overshadowing ones about who will take home the most Olympic gold. So, let the political games begin. Hello and welcome to the Power Vertical Podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. Joining me on the Skype line from Moscow, where he is temporarily embedded, is co-host Mark Galeotti, a professor at NYU, an expert in Russia's security services, and author of the blog In Moscow's Shadows. Welcome, Mark.
Hey there, Brian.
And joining us from London, also via Skype, is co-host Kirill Kobrin, editor of the Russian history and sociology magazine NZ. Welcome, Kirill.
Hello.
Back when the Sochi Olympics was when Sochi was awarded the Olympics back in 2007, things looked a lot different. Russia's economy was growing at a breakneck pace. Vladimir Putin was at the peak of his popularity, and Russia, and Putinism for that matter, looked ascendant and unassailable. Putin clearly hoped that the Sochi Olympics would serve as a coming out party for Russia and a showcase for what was then called the Russian economic miracle. But this is clearly not what these games will be. Mark, what do these games signify now? How do you see this now? If it's not going to be a coming out party.
Okay, well, it's interesting that you called it a coming out party, considering the LGBT issue surrounding it. I think what's happened, as you've implied, is precisely that the context has shifted. You know, Olympic Games are always ridiculous prestige projects for regimes and elites rather than for masses. What they tend to do is precisely caricature or magnify the circumstances in which they're set. Russia is now in a very, very different situation. And the risk then for the Putin regime is precisely what happens is that these Olympics are simply going to become a metaphor for so many other issues, ranging from the fact of a sort of a profligate and wasteful Kremlin through to corruption and sweetheart deals to friends of the Kremlin, through to an inability to get things done. So that for me is sort of the key issue here.
Kirill, how do you see it?
There are several points, separate points in the story, but of course they are connected to each other. First of all, of course, I enthusiastically join Mark's criticism or irony about Olympic Games. Of course, modern sport in itself, and especially a so-called Olympic movement, it's a great delusion, pompous delusion of the modernity. The very thought of sport, especially Olympic Games, of something fair, something about, you know, friendship, something about fun, something about, you know, all the good things in the world, it's absolutely wrong. I'll, just remember the famous essay by George Orwell about football and about the tour for, I think, Moscow Spartak to Great Britain in 1945. Orwell wrote that it's a great delusion that sport is a sort of fair, fun substitute to nationalism, hatred, and war. Usually it's coming along with all these things. Coming along, not, you know, instead of. Of course, sometimes Olympic Games, they were all about, you know, friendship and real sports and so on. But the recent ones, especially the last, 20, 30 years, it's all about business and now politics and now nationalism. That is my first point. The second point is, of course, it's interesting to think about, as you put it, the Olympic Games as a huge coming out.
Well, this doesn't mean it in every sense. In coming out party, I use that in the original sense of the word.
Yes, in all the senses, and the irony of
this situation.
Yes, in all the senses, because it's a coming out party for modern Russian economy.
That was the original intention.
Yes. It's a huge coming out party for, Russian political system and especially security system. Just several days ago, I read in some Lentero or Gazetero about new security measures in Russian, airports and so on, and they restricted any liquids on board, including drugs and so on. So that's medication, sorry. So that's absolutely stupid. That's absolutely stupid. So I think that I can't predict, of course, that will be, a sort of political or especially image disaster of Putin's Russia. No. But anyway, I think we pay too much attention to such event. Actually.
I don't think we can avoid paying attention to these events. But one of the things I wanted to touch on is that Olympic Games are often political watersheds. Think back to the Tokyo Olympics back in 1964. This really marked Japan's reintegration into the international community. And the Seoul Olympics, which I want to talk about a bit, in 1988, in the eyes of a lot of analysts, sparked democratization in South Korea. Do we expect the Sochi Olympics to be a political watershed in any sense of the word? Mark, what do you think?
Yes, with some cautions. Theoretically, they could be some glorious triumph for the Kremlin. Everything goes smoothly. The security isn't intrusive. Nothing collapses. There's no terrorist attack, etc., etc. And if that happens, yes, there probably will be a short-term little sort of popularity bump for the Kremlin. But to be honest, I think that's not likely to have any great impact. Far more likely, though, is that it won't go quite so wonderfully. They'll be scrabbling at the last minute to finish. Something will go wrong. Even if there's no terrorist attack or similar, it's unlikely to be the smoothest success. And I think that's where the issue comes. Because as I said, going back to my earlier point about Sochi becoming a metaphor, things that, the same way as things like Afghan War and Chernobyl became metaphors for many of the problems of the late Soviet Union. So too, Sochi could become a metaphor for other issues. And what happens is then that brings to the fore, it's a way of discussing wider issues about why the Kremlin is not providing the kind of governance that Russia needs anymore. Now, I don't think that immediately is the next step to democratization necessarily, but certainly in terms of political impact, the chance of further eroding Kremlin's legitimacy, its popularity, and so forth. I think that could well happen. And therefore, in this respect, I think actually Putin may have made a mistake in putting such a strong bid and so many resources behind trying to get the Sochi Olympics.
Yeah, no, one of the things that came to my mind after the Khodorkovsky pardon and the amnesties for Pussy Riot members and others and Bolotnaya protesters and others was I thought immediately of Seoul 1988, although it was a miniature version, didn't go nearly as far as the South Koreans did in 1988. But if you remember correctly, South Korea held what were generally considered free and fair elections before that Olympics, because they were faced with a democracy movement that was protesting on the streets, and they didn't want to have the spectacle of this in front of the whole world, and they basically went ahead and held a free election shortly before the Olympic Games. I don't think we're going to be seeing that in Russia, but it seems to me the Khodorkovsky pardon in particular, which came as a surprise, was part of an effort to kind of dampen criticism prior to these games. Would you agree? We discussed this a little bit last week.
Yeah, exactly. Though it's turned out probably to be, again, very short-lived. But the key thing is the Seoul Games were in Seoul. The wonderful thing from the Kremlin's point of view is the Sochi Games are locked away in this sort of isolated security zone well away from Moscow, where then, you know, there is some permission to be running protests and things. But basically, it's a far, far more controllable environment and far smaller. And the Winter Olympics are much smaller than the Full Olympics. Right. So I think for all these reasons, it's gonna, you know, it is much less of a concern whether or not you might have protesters on the streets.
Right, and they're a bit lower profile than the Summer Olympics. Kirill, what about you? Do you see it? Do you see this these Sochi Olympics as being some kind of watershed moment?
If you want to try Olympic Games as an instrument for democratization, just
not just
try,
for democratization,
just try to organize them in say North Korea, and that will be great. Speaking seriously, we must discuss not the so-called real democratization and so on, but we must discuss, I think, the problem of the image making of recent Russian regime. When Putin won Sochi as a place for next Olympic Games, that was, as you told, he was on the peak of the success of his of his political strategy and so on. Now the situation is a very different, not just in economy but in political terms. That was a time, 2007, that was the time of so-called sovereign democracy, sovereign democracy invented by Surkov, and Olympic Games was a symbol of half Russian, half international event that will establish huge new huge power and especially authority of this Putin's regime. Now, and we see, all of us see, that Putin is preparing to the Olympic Games in political terms very carefully. Yes, the Khodorkovsky case, Pussy Riot case, even such small things like this Ilya Farber case, which was released several days ago from the prison and so on. He is trying to let them, Olympic Games, to let them, be just safe with, relative success.
So the ambition has gone out of it. Yes, it's just like, yes, let's get through this.
Yes, yes. And then he will see, I think, if everything, I agree with Mark, if everything will be, perfect, smooth, and so on, of course he will use this relative success or humble success in establishing of a new, of a new political system, which he is desperately trying to establish now. If there will be, not just disaster, but, not such a success, or maybe just, zero result. Maybe, I think I can predict even that in 2 months after Olympic Games, it will be absolutely forgotten in Russia.
One other thing I wanted to also touch on is that these, I'm not sure if we want to call them snubs by foreign leaders, but there's the president of France is not going, the president of Germany is not going, the president of the United States is not going, and in fact, it's the first time in more than a decade that the U.S. is not sending a very high-level delegation at all. There were the president, the first lady, neither the president nor the first lady nor the vice president will be going. The U.S. specifically sent two LGBT former athletes as part of its delegation to send a message there. How important are these snubs by foreign leaders how damaging is this to games and to Putin? Kirill, go ahead.
I think that that will be, some, international reaction to this absence of several world leaders. For a Russian audience, it doesn't matter if, Barack Obama or Francois Hollande is coming to Olympic Games, to Sochi or not, because first of all, Sochi itself, Olympic Games itself, all these, propaganda things, and especially, Russian public, Russian society is not such interested in international relations and international things. So Russia now is in the situation of, you know, semi diplomatic isolation. And if we are speaking about in terms of, you know, coming out, such as, you know, coming out, in this sense, it will be absolutely the same. That will be a coming out of a real international, you know, position of recent Russian regime, semi-isolation. Someone will come from, you know, some even Western countries. Someone will not come, but doesn't matter, doesn't matter. Because everything is focused on economic connections and relationships and business and so on. And all these symbolic acts are in the recent situation are not such important, as far as I understand.
Mark, how do you see it? Do these apparent snubs by foreign leaders matter?
I think Kirill's spot on that this isn't really that significant. It's the kind of thing that leaders and foreign services care about, but which has no real impact beyond that. I mean, you know, leaders like to be shown in photo ops with powerful other people. But, you know, if all else fails, Putin can find some sort of someone he can still be photographed with, or if all else fails, some piece of wildlife. but the point is that, again, I don't think it has an impact one way or the other in terms of will the games be a success, or will it have a sort of an impact on the Kremlin's legitimacy or popularity. But to go to Kirill's point about semi-isolation, I mean, I think that the problem is that these are precisely the kind of gestures that are strong enough to alienate Russia, but not actually strong enough to have any kind of real impact. I mean, particularly, you know, if you look at the clear US snub, but it's the snub that dare not say its name. you know, they're refusing to actually call it that. So, you know, it's this exactly these kind of half measures, you know, carefully calibrated for diplomatic reasons, but which will therefore have little impact except, frankly, alienating Russia more.
Right. Now, the other than security, which we're going to discuss in the second half, the other big issue looming over these Olympics, the other non-sport issue looming over these Olympics is the LGBT issue, of course. And everybody's watching to see what's going to happen here. What kind of gestures will the athletes and the fans make? Will we see something akin to Mexico City 1968 with the Black Power salute that will kind of live on forever in history? Mark, let's go to you first. Do you see this LGBT issue harming the Kremlin or playing into its hands, playing into this image of Putin, the world's new conservative leader? It can really go both ways, can't it?
It could. To be honest, I imagine that, I mean, almost certainly there will be something. There will be some protest, some gesture or whatever. But again, I think I'm going to go back to sort of Kirill's image that just more or less kind of hanging on grimly, waiting for them to be over and that nothing bad will happen. I suspect that from the Russian point of view, any such gestures will be ignored and edited out. You won't be seeing them on Russia 24.
Right.
And so, yeah, there might be some sort of, you know, symbolic photos that then sort of get locked in and trotted out.
But they will be reported by Dosht. They will be reported by Dosht. They will be all over LiveJournal and Twitter. And they will circulate.
They will circulate. But again, they will largely circulate to the people who, you know, who are interested, who are listening, who anyway would otherwise pick them up on, you know, BBC or RFERL or whatever else. But again, I think from the Kremlin's point of view, theoretically they could allow it to play to this, you know, world leader of conservatism. But to do that, you actually have to play up the issue. And I'm going to have the special spectacle of Russian cops dragging off some gold medal-wearing sports person because they are, quote-unquote, sort of, you know, putting on gay propaganda, which I think would be far too sort of politically dangerous an act. Really, all they can just simply do is just grit their teeth and get through it. They put themselves in a ridiculous position. And in this case, I really think it's a lose-lose proposition. Mm-hmm.
Kirill, how do you see it? Does the LGBT issue play into the Kremlin's hands, or will it hurt it, or will it be just neutral?
Just opposite. I think Kremlin invented, or regime itself invented this hardship for itself. They tried to use all this LGBT and homophobia agenda several months ago to establish, you know, a sort of new Putin's majority and so on, never thinking about the, you know, outside view on these problems and so on. Never thought about, you know, how it looks from, you know, and how it will influence the international relations and even the image of Russia in the world. And now they try to cope somehow with this problem. Mm-hmm. Because their initial aim, they failed, yeah? There is no any, you know, serious or real Putin's majority now in Russia. Yeah, there are several ideological or quasi-ideological gestures. They cannot establish such majority because you must invent sort of a long-standing strategy, a standing strategy to do such things and so on. And as we told a lot of times, Putin's the special feature of Putin's politics is today, you know, pragmatism, not, you know, any strategic aims or strategies or conceptual things and so on. They're thinking just about how to survive and how to, you know, to cope with this particular day, and that's all. And now they have the international consequences of this, you know, of this thing. And Olympic Games, that's why it's, you know, I think not very serious, but quite serious problem for Kremlin now, because they have to allow somehow all these, you know, gestures or, you know, any demonstrations of solidarity with the LGBT community in Russia and so on. They can't prevent it. Mm-hmm. They cannot prevent it. And they even cannot criticize them, because if, you know, some sportsmen from, you know, say, United States and so on will, you know, do this thing, they cannot even criticize him, because he is part of, you know, such beautiful and wonderful Olympic Games.
And he's the official delegation of the United States includes Billie Jean King and Brian Boitano.
Yes, that's what I'm speaking about. So they're in quite, you know, unpleasant situation, but I'm not, you know, exaggerated the seriousness of this. Of course, it's a serious problem, but not the crucial problem for Kremlin today.
Well, before Kirill, since I know you love sports so much, I want to throw this, before we move on, I want to throw this last question to you, because you and I both remember the Vancouver Games back in 2010, when the Russian Olympic team, to put it mildly, did not have such a great performance, and there were political repercussions for this, right? Putin puts a lot of stock in sports. He puts a lot of stock in the ideological value of sports. If the Russian team doesn't do so well in Sochi, and this is actually one of the questions, is how well is the Russian team going to actually perform in the Olympics itself? Because it is a big question to me, because you'd think they would really be ready for this. Maybe they learned their lesson from Vancouver. But if the Russian team performs poorly, we know what's going to happen if they perform well. If they perform poorly, would you see any political repercussions from that? Because this is not just the Olympic Games as a whole as a political watershed, but the performance of an Olympic team as a political watershed.
I think that in this case, and I can't exclude this opportunity that a Russian Olympic team will not gain some such great success. In this sense, it's my advice for Putin's propaganda to focus on the games itself, on the grandeur of the event, to focus on, the image of Russia as a mother Russia and mother of, you know, all this, you know, Olympic sports and so on. So to focus on not on the, you know, sports competition itself, but to focus on the cultural, political and ideological event. And in this case, they can, you know, fail because, of course, there will be, you know, a lot of events there, so a lot of money, you know, spent, and Sochi changed dramatically, and so everything can see these changes, and so on. So it's not such important for them, I think so. But of course, if Russian athletes will win,
well, yeah, we all know what's going to happen.
Yes, I can imagine the history of official propaganda. But anyway, sport is a very good tool, instrument for all authoritarian, totalitarian, and quasi-authoritarian, like Putin's regimes. Of course, it's a part of an agenda of you know, strong state, strong society, strong people, and so on. But it's all over. It's sort of quasi postmodernist ideology, and that's all.
Mark, quickly before we move on, how important is the performance of Russia athletically?
Seriously, you expect me to follow from the comment that it was a quasi postmodernist ideology? again, I mean, I think that, you know, if they do well, it's a short-term thing. If they do badly, the potential is, and it's only the potential that exactly, it becomes another one of these symbols. Given Putin's emphasis on sport, and Kirill's about the extent to which, you know, sport and authoritarianism so often go together. If the Olympic team do badly, it's not just simply a reflection on a collection of sports people, nor is it necessarily a reflection on Russia as a whole. It says something about the fact that this regime was unable to do something that it's meant to be good at.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, we'll shift gears into the next section. In a few moments, we'll continue our discussion about the run-up to Sochi and take a closer look at the omnipresent issue of security. I'd like to remind you, you're listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. Joining me on the Skype line from Moscow is co-host Mark Galeotti, a professor at NYU, an expert on Russia security services and author of the blog In Moscow Shadows. And joining us from London also via Skype is co-host Kirill Kobrin, editor of the Russian history and sociology magazine NZ. I'd also like to remind you can subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes. You can read the Power Vertical blog at rferl.org, and you can follow us on the Twitter at Power Vertical.
В Волгограде на железнодорожном вокзале менее двух часов назад...
Информация о количестве пострадавших меняется очень
часто. В Волгограде произошел второй за сутки взрыв.
Дело по статье терроризм.
Повышенные меры безопасности обеспечиваются в Волгограде на всех линиях.
На вокзалах и в аэропортах увеличивается число нарядов полиции.
Повысить меры безопасности по всей стране. На месте
Волгограде... A suicide bombing on a bus in Volgograd. A car bomb in Pyatigorsk. Another suicide bombing in a Volgograd train station. And then this week, Russia launched what it described as the largest security operation in Olympic history. Army soldiers in armored vehicles will join tens of thousands of police officers in patrolling Sochi. Vehicles not registered locally and which do not have special accreditation will be banned. Access to areas around Olympic venues will be limited to people with tickets and proof of identity. And in order to be able to buy a ticket to a sporting event, one needs to fill out a questionnaire and be issued a so-called sports fan's passport. FSB monitoring of phone conversations and email traffic, which is always happening, will be stepped up. And meanwhile, reports have surfaced in the American media that some U.S. athletes have subcontracted their own security firms to airlift them out of Sochi in the event of any trouble. Mark, security is your game, and security's always been a big issue at the Olympics. I mean, who can, of course, forget Munich 1972? And since September 11th, from the Salt Lake City Games in 2002 to London 2012, the issue has only become more and more high profile. So in one sense, Sochi is just continuing this trend, yet it also is something qualitatively different. How do you see this? Are these Olympics going to resemble a war zone? How secure do you expect them to be?
Yeah, the Russian authorities have said that it's going to be a light footprint, discreet security campaign. That seems unlikely, given that, what they've got 12,000 sort of police already deployed, another 13,000 that are going to be in place, 8,000 security troops, 20,000 to 30,000 soldiers. I mean, by contrast, I mean, the total, that's double what was deployed for the much, much larger London right. Olympics, which were in the middle of a major city. And, you know, a much longer sort of set of games.
In a city that was the target of terrorist attacks very recently.
Precisely. So, I mean, I think clearly, you know, the Russians are aware that security is a factor. Doku Umarov, the Chechen rebel leader, has sort of, you know, demanded that maximum force be sort of exerted to try and disrupt these, what he called, satanic games. And, you know, who knows quite what other sort of potential sort of threats are going to bubble up. And given the extent to which sort of Putin has basically made his own personal guarantees of security, it's clear that they want nothing to happen. And in classic Russian style, they are using sort of heavy quantitative sort of deployments to try and ensure that's going to be the case. Of course, the problem is, firstly, that no security is guaranteed. It doesn't matter how many police and soldiers you throw in. Yes, of course, it helps. But nonetheless, inefficiency and corruption are always going to be the weak links in this. And mm-hmm. that's, you know, problems that we've seen in the past with Russian security. The second thing is then the security becomes a story itself. That, you know, some swarthy sort of sports journalist gets a cavity search because some cop thinks he looks like a Chechen. You know, these things can easily happen and overshadow any particular sort of advantage you expect. But again, I think what it says is, again, the nature of the sort of the changing situation. When Russia successfully bid for the Olympics, the resistance within Chechnya had been battered down, and the insurgencies within the rest of the North Caucasus had not ramped up to the stage they have now. You know, now Russia finds itself in a situation in which it's stuck with these games at a time in which actually, yes, I mean, terrorism has become an inconvenient, dangerous, for some lethal, but essentially manageable threat, but nonetheless one that Russia, you know, has to address at all times.
Well, I want to go to this issue of how if Russia's up to actually providing security in these games, and I want to play a clip from an interview RFRL's Russian service did with the Moscow-based security expert Andrei Soldatov this past week, and I want you to react on it. You can kind of have a virtual conversation with Andrei. So let's listen to what Andrei has to say.
All of the surveillance technologies, from unmanned drones to sonars that are supposed to identify enemy submarines, may bring some results, but there are still passive security measures. Dealing with a lone wolf or small groups of fighters that may be planning terror operations, the main work must involve something very different, namely active measures. Active work by anti-terrorism agencies to uncover such plans. This is exactly the area of expertise that constitutes a weak spot of the Russian security services.
Would you agree with Andrei Soldatov's assessment there, that this is these active security measures to uncover plots before they're hatched is actually the weak link in the Russian security arsenal?
Absolutely. As ever, Soldatov knows what he's talking about. You know, they don't have sort of the assets penetrated within the various terrorist movements that would allow them to really know. So I think this is why, again, in classic Russian style, they are seeking to substitute what they've got for what they don't have. You know, we're seeing a really major, shall I say, kinetic campaign taking place inside the North Caucasus. Doors are being kicked in, people are being arrested, people are, in some cases, disappearing. Really in a sort of a shotgun approach, sort of trying desperately just to disrupt every single network that they believe is there or know is there, so that they're too busy basically trying to survive rather than being in a position to actually sort of carefully plan any such threat. It's not a great approach, not least because it alienates a lot of people in the process. But nonetheless, it's an attempt to make up for the fact that they don't have those kind of embedded intelligence assets. Mm-hmm.
Kirill, how do you see the security situation playing out?
When I read about all the security preparations or listen to or see or watch on TV, the only thing which I'm thinking about is common sense, is advising to recommending strongly to avoid Olympic Games, like, you know, I'm trying to avoid Christmas in Western Europe and the United States. It's such unpleasant events. I'm not speaking about, you know, of course, the event itself.
Yeah, be careful there. You're going to offend all
yes,
the... All
yes, yes. I'm not offending. I'm speaking about all this, you know, consumerism
right.
Disaster.
I know that.
Yeah. So, of course, I wonder if someone, so of course, there are a lot of sport fans and so on, but I wonder if someone really wants to go to such place. Because, of course, we are speaking about, and I agree with Mark, that it's a manageable threat. But the question is the price of all this event in various, you know, areas and contexts. First of all, as you know, all these security measures, everyday security measures in Russian airports, railway station, and so on, they are focused ethnically. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
They try to prevent to and searching and stopping and, you know, doing whatever, arresting people which are, you know, look like, you know, Chechens, people from Caucasus, and so on. Mm-hmm. Olympic Games is an international event. There are a lot of various people with various, you know, color of skin and so on are coming to this event. How they, with such experience, very poor, very racist experience, try to prevent someone to do, you know, to all this, you know, bad things and so on. If they are going to stop all the athletes and journalists from, say, Kuwait or India or, you know, Turkey or whatever. Secondly, I think that the very nature, I'm not specialist in security area and so on, but common sense says that the very nature of the terrorist threat now in Russia is very different to the one in the middle of 2000s. That was in 2005, 2007 even. That was a part of a big game which was, on the other side of the front line was a sort of, not united, but several big, really big separatist groups which were fighting for independence of Chechnya and so on. Now, as we see in the Volgograd terrorist attacks and some other events, we are dealing with absolutely isolated, semi-anonymous groups.
Lone wolves.
And, yes, and we don't know, security services in Russia don't know what to do them because no one knows what do they want.
Mm. Mark, what do you think? Is Kirill right? Do the Russians rely too much on profiling in their security operations?
Yes, very much. And again, I think this is a particular challenge also because we've seen that the terrorists are increasingly trying to attract and groom ethnic Russian converts, knowing full well they're much more likely to pass through. But again, I mean, I think this is something that, in fairness, that the Russian security authorities are aware of. And I think the sort of processes we're going to see in Sochi is more about, in the same way as the Volgograd railway explosion was in part precisely because the suicide bomber appears to have been approaching the security barrier, which they'd have to go through metal detectors. And therefore sort of detonated. So it's more about, as it were, using what they've got, which is large numbers of people and the ability to sort of, you know, deploy lots and lots of X-ray machines and everything else to try and cover everybody, to try and get round this profiling issue. So because, yes, I mean, that has historically been one of the big challenges for Russian security is they just tended to assume that they could spot a terrorist just based on how they looked. Mm. But as I said, I think one has to accept that precisely because this is so important to the Kremlin, there has been pressure to actually to require the authorities to really think about what they're doing rather than just simply relying on old knee-jerk approaches.
Right. Okay, well, before we wrap up, I want to play one more cut from Andrei Soldatov, which echoes something Kirill was saying a little bit back. Let's listen to Andrei Soldatov speaking to RFRL's Russian service.
The concept of Olympics as a great celebration of sports is finding itself on a back burner more and more. Now it is rather becoming an issue of security, political ambitions, and so on. I feel that Olympics as a festival of sport is now the last thing that comes to one's mind. I am afraid that this festive mood can now end up tarnished. No one is talking about Olympic principles anymore. All of this has been pushed out of scope to such extent that it can impact the perception of those who will come to watch. I'm not sure that I would still like to come to Sochi or that I would be able to enjoy it if I were an ordinary, uninformed spectator.
How do you respond to that, Mark? Has the Olympics been tarnished? I mean, it sounds very similar to what Kirill was saying earlier.
Yeah, I mean, certainly sort of that's the story. But I'd make two points. One is that, you know, given someone who is not in the slightest bit interested in sport, I'm perfectly willing to believe that there are people who are that fascinated that they're able and willing to tune out all the sort of the extra stuff. But the second point is, come on, this is hardly new. I mean, take the Beijing Olympics. I mean, was that anything more than a sort of, again, if we're talking about a coming out party for China as a new world power? The Beijing Olympics had, you know, sort of political controversies because of, you know, what was going on in Tibet. It was then almost sort of semi-overshadowed by the earthquakes that took place beforehand. Again, it was a massive sort of project of state soft power branding, although one that was probably rather more successful than Sochi is likely to be. You know, I don't think the notion of the Olympic ideal in an age of soft power and in an age of branding and marketing and everything else really is more than just a sort of a fond illusion anyway.
Okay, well, and that is unfortunately all we have time for today. I would like to remind you, you have been listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFRL. Joining me on the Skype line from Moscow has been co-host Mark Galliotti, a professor at NYU, an expert on Russian security services, and author of the blog In Moscow Shadows. And joining us from London, also via Skype, has been co-host Kirill Kobrin, editor of the Russian history and sociology magazine NZ. Thanks for the great discussion, gentlemen.
My pleasure.
I'd also like to thank our superhumanly patient producer, Tanya Konchova, and my totally awesome colleague, Pavel Buturin, proprietor of the equally awesome Twitter feed, Russia Police Watch, which you can and should follow at Rus Police Watch. I'd also like to remind you, you could subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes. You could read the Power Vertical blog at rfrl.org, and you can follow us on the Twitter at Power Vertical. The Power Vertical podcast will take a 2-week break as I undergo a medical procedure I've been avoiding for years. Try not to get too bored without us. We will be back on January 31st. And now, as always, I leave you with the ambient sounds of my favorite socially conscious Russian rapper, Noise MC.